Hey everybody, my name is Will Smith. I am a medical student and I am currently doing my rotations at Jamaica Hospital in Queens.
My story starts out in an emergency room in Northern California just over 11 years ago. I still remember hearing the page called overhead. Pediatric CPR, back door, go into room 26. I stopped what I was doing, raced over to the recess room, pulling the Braslau cart behind me. I pulled out everything that I thought we would need and I set out the Braslau tape on the gurney. The unmistakable high-pitched sound of oxygen going through a BVM could be faintly heard down the hallway. As the hiss grew louder, so did the rhythmic sound of the gurney wheels going over our less than perfectly tiled floors. Eventually, the noise stopped right in front of me. When I looked up, firefighters were swarming the gurney in front of me. As the first two medics peeled away, they revealed a lifeless child that couldn't have been more than 18 months old. In the field, initial attempts at an ET tube and IV were unsuccessful, so all we had was an IO in the left leg, and the infant was being bagged. As we moved the patient from the stretcher to the gurney, a nurse was already pulling up the first round of epi and atropine. I took a quick second to hook her up to the monitor, and then I started compressions. As we worked, the medic on scene started telling us the story. This was Reagan, and she was 16 months old. About 5 days ago, she had been to the doctor and diagnosed with viral bronchiolitis. The doctor said that there wasn't a whole lot that they could do. Mom just needed to make sure that she stayed hydrated and to give her Tylenol whenever she spiked a fever. For the most part, the fevers were responding to Tylenol, but this afternoon, they weren't going down. In order to avoid another trip to the emergency room, Mom decided to give her a cold bath. After about 5 or 10 minutes in the bath, Mom noticed that Reagan was shaking a little bit and decided to take her out. She realized that she had forgotten the bath towels, so she went down the hall to grab a few. After grabbing a towels and shutting the cupboard door, Mom instantly felt like something was wrong. She could no longer hear Reagan thrashing around in the bathtub, so she ran back down the hall to the bathroom, and as soon as she got there, she saw that Reagan had slipped under the water. She panicked. Reagan wasn't moving, she wasn't breathing, so Mom scooped her up and tried shaking her. Still nothing. Before attempting CPR, Mom called EMS, and a few minutes later, they arrived on scene. This had all occurred about 20-25 minutes ago, and now she was here with us. As the last round of epi and atropine were pushed, everyone in the room knew that we were coming to the end. From the foot of the bed, the doctor solidified our last game plan. We were going to keep working for another couple of minutes and then check pulses for the last time. My arm was cramping and I couldn't feel my fingers, but I wasn't about to stop. All at once, the chaos of the room seemed to go motionless. All eyes were fixed on the monitor. The entire back wall of the recess room was nothing but firefighters and police officers. On the other side were social workers, clinical educators, other nurses, and even our emergency room director was there to see how they could help, but there wasn't much else to do. In reality, there wasn't anything anybody could do. I did my final compression, and I took my hand off of Reagan's chest. She was on her own. The next couple seconds felt like an eternity. Eventually, green QRS complexes began marching across the monitor, and piercing beeps broke the silence of the room. They were fast and they were strong, but most importantly, they were unassisted and they were hers. 16-month-old Reagan had been granted another chance at life. The doc left the room to go update the mother. Everyone in the room stood there for a moment to process what had just happened. Anytime a movie or a TV show tries to depict the motion of working in the ER, this is the atmosphere that they're trying to grasp. It was surreal. In my mind, I knew that I was standing there right next to the gurney, helping resuscitate Reagan, but part of me also felt like I was hovering above the room, watching everything that was going on. As the distraught mom ran into the room to grab the hand of her child, our team snapped back into action. We knew that there was still a lot to do. Realistically, Reagan was going to be transferred to a tertiary center and get the much-needed resources that our hospital couldn't provide. It took about 45 minutes or so for the critical care transport to show up. I still remember helping load her on the gurney, walk her outside to the ambulance, and loading her in. As the ambulance lights faded away in the distance, I completely broke down crying in the ambulance bay. This is the first time I had ever experienced something like this, and I just didn't know how to handle it. I called my girlfriend at the time, who eventually became my fiance and now has been my wife for 9 years, and I tried to explain everything that had happened, but I just didn't have the capacity to get it out. A lot of it was the raw emotion of everything that had just happened, but part of it was also the confirmation that I was where I needed to be and that medicine is what I needed to do with the rest of my life. For the past few years, I had been on a wandering path to finish my prereqs for med school. Some semesters that meant I would get up at 6 in the morning, I'd go to class for 5 or 6 hours, then do a 12-hour shift in the ER. If I was lucky, I'd get off somewhat early, 3, 4 in the morning, drive to campus, sleep for a couple hours, then go to an early morning biology or OCHEM class. After that, there was also another lab for an additional 3 or 4 hours, and it wasn't until then that I could go home and rest. I'd repeat that a couple times a week, and then I'd have one day on the weekends to rest. Those 30 to 35 hour chunks really took a lot out of me, and it meant less time to study and less time with my family. At times, I wasn't sure if this was going to be worth it, but after being part of the team that helped resuscitate Reagan, it felt like confirmation that I was where I needed to be. Every year when February comes around, I take some time to reflect on that night. As I gain more knowledge and experience in the medical field, I've come to understand the reality of the situation in regards to Reagan's recovery, but I don't ever let that diminish the affirmation that I had that night. I'm humbled to be part of that team and be a part of something that was so much greater than myself, and I'm honored to be able to dedicate the rest of my life to emergency medicine.